He had been hiding for hours, mostly in the woods of Cold Spring Park, in backyards and in the play structure behind the elementary school he had once attended, which is where the cops found him at around 8 o'clock. He submitted to the handcuffs without complaint, the police report said. He did not run. He greeted the cop by saying, "I'm the one you're looking for," and, "I didn't do it." When the cop said dismissively, "Then how did your fingerprint get on the body?" Jacob blurted, foolishly or cannily, I am still not sure. "I found him. He was already lying there. I tried to pick him up so I could help him. Then I saw he was dead and I got scared and ran." It was the only statement Jacob ever gave the police. He must have realized, belatedly, that it was risky to blurt out confessions like that one, and he never said another word. Jacob knew, as few boys do, the full value of the Fifth Amendment. Later, there would be speculation about why Jacob made this singular statement, how complete and self-serving it was. There were intimations he had crafted the statement beforehand and conveniently let it slip. He was gaming the case, launching his defense as early as possible. All I know for sure is that Jacob was never as smart or as cunning as he was described in the media. In any case, after that, the only thing Jacob told the cop over and over was, "I want my dad." He would not be bailed that night. He was held in the lockup in Newton, just a mile or two from our house. Lori and I were allowed to see him only briefly, in a little windowless visiting room. Jacob was obviously shaken. His eyes were watery and red-rimmed. His face was flushed, a single horizontal slash of red across each cheek, like war paint. He was obviously scared shitless. At the same time, he was trying to stay composed. His manner was clenched, rigid, mechanical. A boy imitating manliness, at least an adolescent's conception of manliness. That was the part that broke my heart, I think. The way he struggled to hold it together, to keep that storm of emotion, panic, anger, sorrow, all siloed up inside himself. He would not be able to do it much longer, I thought. He was burning fuel fast.
"Jacob," Lori said in a wobbly voice, "are you all right?"
"No, obviously not." He gestured at the room around him, the situation he was in, and made a sardonic face.
"I'm dead."
"Jake, they're saying I killed Ben? No way, no way. I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe this." I said, "Hey, Jake, it's a mistake. It's some kind of horrible misunderstanding. We'll work it out, okay? I don't want you to lose hope. This is just the beginning of the process. There's a long way to go."
"I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I'm just, like..."
He made an exploding sound, and with his hands he sculpted a mushroom cloud.
"You know, it's like, who's that guy in the story?"
"Kafka."
"No, the guy from What's It, the movie."
"I don't know, Jake."
"Where the guy, like, finds out the world isn't really the world? It's just like a dream, like a simulation, a computer made it all, and now he gets to see the real world. It's like an old movie."
"I'm not sure."
"The Matrix."
"The Matrix? That's old?"
"Keanu Reeves, Dad, please."
I looked at Lori. "Keanu Reeves?" She shrugged,